More than 3 years ago at Rockefeller, a young fellow came, Alex Petrov. He was 25. He had a dream. His dream was to study the ecology of the Earth, all the bacteria and microbes of the Earth. So I told him, fine, it's rare to find a fellow who comes with a dream at this young age. So came to the lab, and we started to work on the microbes, which are prokaryote and eukaryote, in the soil ecosystem. And I will want to tell you a few things about that, and in particular to the microbe which energy comes from oxidating sulfur. You know, at the surface of the Earth, when you have marsh or when you have a lake at the bottom of the lake, you have decomposition. Decomposition gives you sulfur. But all that is in water. So you have also oxygen coming from the atmosphere and diffusing through water. Now those microbes need a lot of energy, as you will see. So diffusion is not good enough, which means that they will develop a strategy where they will advect water, and by advecting water, they will advect oxygen, they will advect sulfur, and then they will be able to pump oxygen a lot. Now, considering sulfur, they develop another strategy, which is done by many soil bacteria. They will store sulfur in granules inside their body. So in doing that, they will solve two conditions. And you see, I don't know if some of you cannot see what I wrote here, but the sulfur oxidating microbe, autotroph, they take sulfur, make SO4, and in that they use part of the energy to transform CO2 into sugar. But of course, you have at the same place other bacteria, other microbes, which will reduce. Those are sulfur-reducing bacteria. And they will take the sugar and oxidize it back to CO2 and take the energy from that and will be bringing SO4 back to sulfur. So this cycle is something we are studying right now, but not what I will tell you about. This is a minimal ecosystem at the surface of the Earth. What I want to today, I will focus on the autotroph, the sulfur oxidating bacteria and the sulfur oxidating ciliate. Because, as you will see, there will be, well, maybe I should take this machine. So, some general argument. You see, the primary biology of our planet is microbial. You know, microbes, they do all of our environment through the soil. And we are only now beginning to explore the biological diversity of the planet. Well, what was done up to now was to look at what is oxidation, reduction, salinity, temperature, but not the mutual relation between the organism, which is what I described, for example, here. And this ecology starts to be understood, but there is something more. There's also correlation between closely related populations and habitat. I mean by that the following. For a given condition of sulfur oxidation in the presence of water at the surface of the Earth, there are two solutions. One is a bacteria, the other one is an eukaryote, a ciliate, will do exactly the same thing, as you would see. They store sulfur. They advect water. In order to advect water, they have to be able to pump. In order to pump, they should not move. They should be attached. So they will develop filaments to attach, which are called, they will tether, and will make from all the tether some kind of tissue, a veil on which they will attach. And they will do all the same things. So it will be somewhat difficult for us to separate which is a prokaryote, which is a eukaryote. The lesson for us was that the environment seems to define a lot of what we are, a lot of what we do. So, for example, Alex was able to go to Woods Hole, where we get our bacteria and our ciliate, And if you make a cut within centimeter, you see you have different layers. And those layers correspond to different type of microbes related to at the surface there is oxygen, then there is reduction when you don't have more oxygen, then there is no more sulfur, but you have a different gas like methane. Here you reduce iron, and all of that is organized and structured at different levels of the Earth. Now, in normal Earth, when you have trees and you plow and all that, it's not that you cannot see it. But if you look in marshes where it's very simple, or at the bottom of a lake, like here, you see this is 5 centimeters, 10, 15 centimeters at the bottom of the lake. And you can see here all the oxidation of sulfur and nitrogen. Then you start the reduction, iron, NH4, CH4. All that will, at the end of it, organize the world the way we see it.
So, on that, so you have magnesium plus two, you have manganese plus two, you don't have magnesium?
Not in this level, where they did measurement. But they will reduce all of that. Yes?
What's the axis?
The axis is distant from the surface.
How far in
5 centimeters, 10 centimeters, 15 centimeters in depth.
Does it have units?
From the bottom. Okay? And so this is just an indication that how the structure of the Earth is. Now, in this talk, which will be about the hydrodynamic of microbes, I will show you that even at the 10 micron scale, hydrodynamic can play a dominant role. All the interaction between our microbes will be purely hydrodynamics. No chemistry, nothing. So I will start by the behavior in nature, how it is, of the ciliate and the bacterium. And after that, I will show you my own introduction after what Alex did, was trying, from what I see, to invent a new state. And that new state is the first observation of a crystal of rotating object. The crystal rotating, and I think it's the first observation in nature of such a state. So this is to replace that. This comes from looking in the computer. So, you know, you have the autotroph and bacteria are there. We take water and carbon dioxide and make sugar. And then you have the heterotroph, which reduce, and they take the sugar, take energy from it, and bring back sulfate from sulfide. So this is the cycle. Okay. So some microbes use decomposition to get the energy. They oxidize sulfur. So in that environment, we found a ciliate and a bacterium. The bacterium is a prokaryote, a ciliate is a eukaryote, a single-cell eukaryote. They have more or less the same size. One, the bacteria is 7 microns, the big bacteria. The ciliate is 15 microns. Now, to increase oxygen flow through water, because they live in water at the surface, they apply strong advection of water. And as you will see, a large Peclet number. For those who don't know, the Peclet number is a ratio between what is advected to what is diffusing. So between advection of oxygen to diffusion of oxygen. And the Peclet number can be as high as 50 when they self-organize into a structure. Mm-hmm. They move extremely fast, 0.5 millimeter per second. If you scale to our size, it's as if we could run at 100 meter per second. So this is about almost 100 times what E. coli can do. They have the world record in speed. They have a size of about 10 micron. The Reynolds number is still small, about 10 to the minus 2. But the Peclet number can be very large. And then they store sulfur in granule inside. Other Earth bacteria will store magnetic structure. Those are famous bacteria. Those ones will use sulfur, which are needed for the oxidation. Now, they can move fast, but if they move fast, they don't advect water. So they have to attach in order to flow, to pump water. For that, they can test the unboundary. They produce filament, as you will see. Now, all those filaments are sticky. They stick to each other. And at the end, for ways we don't understand, they make a tissue of tether, a veil, on which they will attach. You will see that each microbe acts like a small tornado in the sense that they pump and they rotate. For example, the second part of the bacteria is rotating at 15 Hertz. And 15 Hertz, so for 10 micron objects. And of course, they contribute to the soil ecosystem. So essentially, what they do, they take sulfur, H2S, with oxygen to make sulfate, and of course, liberating some free energy. And the part of this energy is make sugar from CO2. So this part of this carbon cycle. You have the energy cycle and you have the carbon cycle. So usually in where they are, you have mud, you have some water, oxygen diffused, and the sulfide here diffused. So you are in two gradients, a gradient of H2S or sulfur and a gradient of oxygen. So the problem will be that diffusion of oxygen is not effective enough. Those organisms have about 400 flagellum. So they are very powerful objects. So how does Alex do the experiment? He goes to Woods Hole. At Woods Hole, take mud, and from the mud, extract the bacteria and the ciliate. Think about this young man developing all the technology, because we cannot have them normally. So the way you develop, you have agar, you add the sulfate, you have sand where the bacteria will be, and they will develop their veils. You have oxygenated water, and you look at the function of time of the kind of organism which will come out from here. So here you have two gradient of oxygen and gradient of sulfide. For example, the veil I told you is a sheet which is formed. This, for example, is one of the veils, and you will see others. Okay, now I will start to tell you about the ciliate. Now don't be afraid, the ciliate is an object which is 10 to 15 micron with about 400 flagellum plus organized flagellum in this place, which is a mouse. That's how the bacteria, the ciliate eats bacteria. This is electron microscopy, so it's not what it is, it's dead. In real life, all those flagellum are straight. So you have those objects. This is a view of the mouse. I will not enter into that, but you see it has wonderfully organized cilia. The ciliate are a big one, about 100 nanometers. They are made of microtubules, lining, and so on. When you take off the flagellum, the ciliate, as you can see, is a highly organized structure. And so it's a beautiful object of nature. It divides normally. See this one? This is the second part of normal division. So this ciliate will tether in the ciliate. You see, it will attach to any rigid object, and you can see here, you can see where the tether is. You can see that it's pumping. If you wait, the ciliate is here. At the end of this movie, it will be here, which means it keeps producing the tether. Also, you have to ask a question, because all that rotating, how does the O-ring here is organized? So that this can be done. I don't have any answer to that. So you see, it keeps moving. So I will show you a number of pictures about this eukaryote, the ciliate. The dark region you see, or there are the nucleus, it has two nucleus, or it is sulfur crystals. Now, this is what they organize in vein. The thing you see here is a vein made of all those tassels. We don't know how it self-organizes itself. It's a kind of tissue on which the the ciliate will attach. So here you have the sulfur coming. From here you have oxygen, and this is water. And here you see a complete 2D organization of the ciliate. And this, when we estimate, has a Peclet number about 40, which means that it's advecting all the time. Advecting water, so bringing oxygen and sulfur. Now, when you look at the solution of this sheet, it's linearly stable, but it's unstable non-linearly. Meaning by that if you have some concentration of ciliate compared to the mean, it will pump more, it will bring oxygen more, so there will be chemotaxis of oxygen, and you will accumulate more ciliate, so you will have an instability developing. Okay, now suppose you are in a test tube and you limit the oxygen. As it's burning oxygen, it will have to, the vein will have to move at essentially at constant velocity to stay at the same oxygen concentration. So you will see from here, and of course it's highly accelerated. It takes days, what I'm showing you. You see, this is the front. This is now it's unstable. Then it will restart itself. And this is the vein forming and moving at constant velocity with instabilities, which I will show you. So it's linearly stable. But any amplitude fluctuation will lead to an instability. And we'll see this instability, which will also lead to convection. You see? And two instable modes interact and then reform. And what you see here is ciliate getting out because there's a very high concentration there. So I'll run it again, and you see nonlinear instabilities in this problem. And everyone attracted to one of them. So that, of course, is reasonably easy to do. I will not enter into the mathematics that if you have a fluctuation of oxygen, you concentrate the ciliate, and then everything becomes nonlinear, but you can solve it. Now, this is not a picture of the ciliate, where you don't see the flagellum. It has two nucleus, those are the two nucleus, and those are sulfur granules. So you see, it stores the sulfur, and with all of the flagellum, it can pump. Okay, so that is the eukaryote. Now I'll show you the prokaryote, which is the bacterium. This bacterium, you see, does exactly the same thing. So much so that when we try to separate them, we have some difficulties. So for example, this is a test tube. This is a veil of the bacterium. This is the bacterium, about 7 microns, a little deformed by the electron microscopy. Those are the flagellum. Flagellum are 10 nanometers, so it's very hard to see them. And there are 400 to 500 of them around. So it's an extraordinarily big pump. But at the same time, the flagellum of bacteria rotates. So the whole thing will rotate. Now, this is my bacteria. It is tessered, but everything is similar, so you cannot see it. But you will see what I mean by an hydrodynamic tornado. You see the rotation? Mm-hmm. And you see the pumping? It keeps pumping extremely effectively. And at the same time, it rotates very fast. All the black region here are sulfur granules. So this object exists at the surface of the Earth, where you have some marsh or some water and decomposition. And you can see that it's like a tornado, it turns and pumps. So it has two effects. Now suppose, I move a little bit then, suppose that I don't let him attach, but I have here a boundary condition. Then the bacteria will stick to the boundary and will start to pump water along the boundary. Now, again, same thing. They form veil in bacteria. You might see that they're rotating. And you see there's a huge density of them in two dimensions. And this high density is able to attract very strongly the flow. So again, sulfur comes from here, oxygen comes from here. Now, I showed you the instabilities for the ciliate. This is instability for the bacteria. The same. The sheath, the veil become unstable. There is an accumulation of bacteria here and here. And because of that, you have a convective flow, which is much stronger here than backflow. So associated with all sheet, there is a linear convection type. Not due to temperature difference, but just to convection.
If they coexist with the ciliate, do they share these veils?
What?
Do they share the veils?
No.
Because the tissue
are very different. So it depends when you select.
So then, but they both want to be in the same place?
They're more or less in the same place, not exactly in the same place, not exactly in the same concentration of oxygen. So, but you could have veil of one and veil of the other. Okay, so this is the bacteria. Those are all the granules. Sulfur granules. You see plenty of sulfur granules. This bacteria is very odd. The way it divides, you see, is from the side, not from the two ends. Very hard to understand this. I'm interested in self-reproduction. This is a very complex process of self-reproduction. Now, of course, realize it's a big bacteria. E. coli is of the order of microns. This is of the order of 7 microns. Okay, fine. So this is what you have in the wild. Ingredient. Ingredients, they will always tether and pump. Now, if you don't put them in a gradient, but in homogeneous fluid, then they don't tether anymore. They don't have gradient, they don't have to look for. And so what happens then is that suppose I have a sample between conversely, between glass plate, and I have my bacteria, which keep moving very fast. It's almost spherical. When it arrives here, it wants to move. So in order to do that, it pumps water very effectively. At the same time, it rotates, okay? So it rotates and pumps. Suppose you have another bacteria here. It's attracted by the flow. So you can see that a crystal will form, crystal of bacteria. But at the same time, they each rotate. So if you have two of them nearby, they will rotate with respect to each other.
And that is a crystal.
What? So it will be a crystal.
Periodic.
Yes, you will see. So this is biophysics. I mean, I put the system in a homogeneous medium, so I don't have a tether, I don't have veil, and I construct a state of matter, which, doesn't exist any place. Rotating bacteria, a rotating object, making rotating crystals. So again, I play it once more so that you understand what I'm saying. Here it's tethered, but if it's not tethered, if you have a glass plate here, you see it will pump. And at the same time it will rotate. It's as simple as that. So it's all purely hydrodynamic. So that's what I want to say. So essentially a bacteria is like that. It keeps pumping and rotating. So if at tight equals zero, you have two bacteria at this distance, after 1 second, they are attracted to each other and they start to rotate with respect to each other. So now I will show you amusing movies, because you will see that with these things we can make unstable fixed point, limit cycle, everything dynamical system can do with this simple phenomenon. So first, crystal formation. Crystal will form, they're all rotating. Just pumping. Let me run it once more. You are witnessing the first observation of a rotating crystal. Yeah. I don't understand. Okay, fine. Sorry. So this was I cannot rewrite the movie for it. Each one is rotating, each one is pumping, so it makes a crystal with six-sided, of course, symmetry, everything you expect. So you have crystal forming at some, now this is for some enlargement. You see crystals, you see six-sided symmetry. This is when we enlarge a small region, you see facet. And as usual, so this is a two-dimension crystal, so one-dimension surface, and this surface is melting, so you will see a lot of reorganization. You can see that the small one rotate fast, bigger one rotate not so fast, and the whole thing moves because you have a rotating crystal of rotating object. So,
okay, where does the glass cover slip? Is that under?
Yes, this is looking, the cover slip is this projection. Is this. Here's the cover slip. They come to it, but on the other cover slip, they do the same. Because they move and then they are spherical, so they cannot detach.
What
they
is
keep
the,
pumping
what is the thickness of the layer?
It's one bacteria layer.
Just one.
And the distance between cover slip, of course, is 300 micron. Now, you see crystal, you see faceted, and as usual with surface melting, which is this line melting, because this is 2D, you will see reorganization.
You can actually you can see some sevenfold. I mean, typically in 2D hexagonal, you can see
six-sided. Yes, yes. You will see all the six-sided and all the anomaly with six-sided, with X numbers, and you can see they're rotating. Yeah, of course, the surface reorganizes itself all the time, and it's what the theory of a 2D crystal will do. They do it, rotate. Of course, we can write the equation. I will not enter into detail, but dx dt, this term is a pumping, and this term is interaction between rotating bacteria. So when I is neighbor to j, this is 1, otherwise it's 0. This is the strength of the interaction between two rotating bacteria, which you can vary. So essentially, at the surface, you see, you have the rotating bacteria, so this one at the surface, is submitted to three forces. There is, of course, the force due to solid-solid repulsion. There is a force due to the rotation. And of course, there is a pumping force, because each one keeps pumping. And you have to solve this problem, if you can. So now, when you have a small crystal, you'll see that it rotates and it reorganizes itself.
In the experiment, how do you make sure that you only have a layer? How do you know that you don't?
Because we change.
How do you do it?
We change the field of view. We can look, and we.
No, but I mean, how do you, like, why don't you have fluctuations? So that you
no, because what keeps the whole thing is the friction to the glass wall. And the second layer, see the layer of bacteria, this is unstable. So it's only a monolayer. And you see the friction which will come here is friction to the glass wall. So, for example, the next experiment is to do this with a free water-air interface, where the friction will be reduced. Then we will do it in the drop with high curvature to see how curvature affects the whole thing.
Albert, sorry. So how long are flagella compared to the size of the bacteria?
How long is the flagella?
Yeah.
Comparable to the size of each bacteria, 5 to 10 micron. You see, an interesting problem is the one I think you are starting to raise. What about the flagella in between?
Yeah.
They are not destroyed. So they again create some self-organizing thing. You are thinking of schooling, or schools maybe, but what surprised me is that they very nicely organize themselves between. But we don't understand how. For example, we have 400 flagella. How can they synchronize in order to create this velocity?
So could they be braided into ponytails sticking out of the plane?
I don't know. The point is they rotate fast, which means that the flagellum do organize themselves. They certainly organize themselves. It's very hard to see because those are 10 nanometer objects, but we can mark them. And of course, it's one of the things we would like to do. Okay, now, you see, you can go from unstable fixed point to stable fixed point. Here we have a group of 16 bacteria. It's unstable, surface unstable. So they lose bacteria until they reach 13. There they have a good facet, and that becomes stable. So you will go to go from unstable to stable fixed point.
So that group of 13 that acts as a unit?
Yes.
Will that group of 13 rotate?
Oh, yes. You see, slowly they lose. You can see the rotation.
Yeah.
And you will see when they reach the number which is 13, now, this is stable and rotates. So we go from unstable fixed point to stable fixed point. Now, if you want to see a limit cycle, I can show you a beautiful limit cycle. My bacteria does everything I want when I was doing 30 years ago. Dynamical system. So when you have a system like that, 7 plus 1, we'll see. So of course, depending on the size, the rotation, for small size, it rotates fast. For big size, it rotates slowly. And this, we did modeling of that, it's trivial. Okay, now I will amuse you with, and this one a little bigger, or a little less, but so this is one minute cycle. But I could show you quite a number. I will bore you if I show you too much presentation. So of course we can simulate. And this is a simulation which was done by Alex. Of the system, it's always the same story. If you have an X number, which is 1, or 7, or 19, it's stable. If you add or subtract one, it becomes unstable.
Is this a full hydrodynamic simulation?
Yes. This is a hydrodynamic simulation of the system. Here, it's another one where, on function of time, we change the interaction between the rotating objects. Mm-hmm. And you'll see that they will rotate faster and faster. And then it will be metastable because they will stop. They will start with some configuration. You see here, now we are accelerating, become unstable. And then it will reorganize. Now this has a given velocity, strength of interaction between them. And then when we come back, it's another metastable state, which is stable also. So, well, look, there's a lot of game we can do. Now, come to X number, you see. First X number is 1, after is 7, after is 19, this is stable. But suppose you add one or you subtract one, then of course it becomes unstable. So in this case, I think we had the wrong bacteria in the simulation. And then you start the instability development. If you subtract one from this 19x number, you start this unstable also. And of course, the experiment shows that also. So I think in this one, we subtract one, you see. And of course, it started unstable. So you can play a lot of dynamical system game at infinitum with true bacteria which live in our breath. So, now, 3 plus 1. Simulation of 3 plus 1. So you could think, no, this is a simulation. Reality cannot do that. So, we shall use the reality. So any game you can think of, my bacteria will play it by putting them in the right configuration, whether it's stable, unstable, you can have mid-cycle, you can have this, you can have many, many, many phenomena. Okay, so that is the biophysics. Okay, I think I am at the end of my talk, so what you have to remember about this talk? First, you have to remember that there is in the universe bacteria, ciliate, they, at the surface of the earth, will oxidize, for example, and they'll oxidize the decomposition. And the decomposition is sulfur, and then you will have a sulfur oxidizing bacteria, those are the one I showed you. They are autotrophs in the sense that they get a lot of energy from the oxidation, so they transform CO2 into sugar. But then you have reducing bacteria, which will oxidize the sugar and bring SO4 back to us. So right now, we have those two species in an experiment with microfluidic to study how the interaction is, how do they position themselves. The first simple ecosystem of the Earth. So that's one thing you have to remember. Second thing is that for a given environment, you can have bacteria, you can have eukaryotes. Which means this environment, maybe everybody will look a bit the same in their behavior, even if they are different. So our eukaryotes and our bacteria are so hard to separate because they do everything. They make crystal, they tether, they make veil, they pump oxygen, and so on. And finally, the last one is to show you how strong is the hydrodynamic interaction in some cases. It's another lesson from nature. Everything which can be done will be done if it is useful, essentially. So hydrodynamics, low Reynolds number hydrodynamics, in this case is very useful, so it's done totally. Those are pumping objects. They keep pumping sulfur and oxygen. Because they do that, they need a lot of energy, so pumping becomes important, and so on. So you see that there is some logic in this. And of course, second part is my way of playing games, which I love to. Okay. We'll stop here.
So we have some time for questions.
Have you ever seen any of the bacteria divide in one of these spinning clusters and go from stable to unstable?
Yes, the bacteria, we are moving, the bacteria dividing, and as they divide, they turn. Because again, each part has flagellum. And they start to do them. So you can see it, as they divide, they keep rotating and dividing at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yes, they do that too, which is pretty surprising.
Have you seen, you presume they have counterclockwise and clockwise?
No.
What picks the...
No, it's broken symmetry. It's all one direction.
Which is picked by what?
Now,
the flagellum motor, right?
The flagellum motor certainly is the one which defines. Because flagellum motor rotates, this is a flagellum which does not move back and forth. So it must define
the rotation. The flagella themselves are helix, are helices with a handle.
So that would certainly write the symmetry. Well, you want to do anti-ferromagnetism. There are many games we could play, but unfortunately, maybe it's with some limitation. But our problem is that we don't understand how they synchronize. The ciliate we have no be showing the synchronizations are way the propagation along. But those are big, big flagellums, so we can visualize. Here we don't know, so we have to mark them by, and in order to see this evidently organized. You realize that it's an extraordinary speed, given the size. So they have to synchronize.
Who has to synchronize? The bacteria or the...
The ciliate synchronize with movies.
Yeah.
I mean, you see the flagellum moving, the wave propagates.
Yeah.
But for the bacterium, we don't know. We do not know how they do it.
Wait, why do they have to synchronize? All they do is spin.
There are some problems. They have to still put together, bundle or do something. Because they rotate like that, so they have to bundle.
We're in the Institute for Theoretical Physics here, Albert. Are there any theoretical problems that I should look at what you're describing and say, if we could predict for Albert this, that, or something else? Is there some role for theory in that?
Well, simple equation explain many things, but we don't understand first the velocity, how is it? We don't understand the interaction between the flagellum two bacteria, because you realize they turn the same direction, so there's a big shear. Mm-hmm. It's a serious shear. Nevertheless, they come out of it absolutely intact. So. Why is that so? What kind of medium are we creating between those flagellums? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'll talk to you. Okay.
So speaking of...
Yes, because maybe you have some.
No,
but you would have to know.
But so speaking of theory, sort of going back to this coexistence of the autotrophs and heterotrophs, so does one know anything about the layering and stability there? Is there
too
some...
Too early to tell, I don't know, because we are just...
So do you want some theoretical prediction?
Yes.
I
showed you at the beginning that on the Earth, when it's not moved by growing or trees, or all the bacteria are layered. They are layered like in prehistoric conception. Layered, this is this type and this is this type, and nobody really understands how it organizes.
And they know to do
this. Yes. And I show you this fantastic picture cut at Woodsworth. Mm-hmm. You see the different layers. And they're all different bacteria. That is a theoretical question, a serious one.
So are you trying to do this experiment with the two, and presumably you would be able to control, for example, the density? And perhaps see that they mix under some conditions, but not others.
I'll show you the kind of drawing we are doing.
Okay.
We are putting the two, the reducing and the oxidating together, and we have a flow above. Mm-hmm. And on the flow, we can put everything we want. And then we can change the concentration of the species.
Mm-hmm.
So this is basic idea. And that's what Alex is running now.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a beautiful, very beautiful, simple ecosystem. You oscillate between sulfur and sulfate, and in that you oscillate between CO2 and sugar and CO2 and sugar. So...
But the experiment is on what length scale? So you have a layer, but...
No, it's not
100 microns or 4 centimeters?
Look, I did not go too much into detail, but something like this. Here we can flow different things. Here are the two bacteria, and they are not allowed to move away. but anything can diffuse in. And we want to see, does it stratify? What happens? What
and the length scale is sub-millimeter or centimeter?
It's reasonable, actually, big length scale. By the way, the thing I'm the most proud of all the second part of the experiment, it costs nothing. It's a simple microscope. There's nothing fancy.
It's just playing in the mud.
And there's nothing everywhere. So what you have to do is to extract from the mud.
That's sad.
There's zero technology in this experiment. Zero. None. It's always what I know.
You need nice cameras.
What?
You need nice cameras.
No, no, that's a micro. No. You're wrong. It's simple camera.
Yeah.
So I cannot afford the fancy cameras.
Have you thought of making binary systems, mixtures, like mostly, of, imagine you take mostly the bacteria and then start adding the eukaryotes as an impurity?
No. There are many things you can do. You can put objects,
and then just see how defects develop.
No. Well, by the way, the second part is not yet published. It's sent to publication. It's just, I think, the first observation of rotating crystal of rotating object, which happened to be our bacteria, which is our bacteria.
Okay, thank you.